Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, November 25th, 2017. This is episode 1442. Enjoy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Oh, yeah, time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and all that jazz, augmented reality. 8888-ASK-LEO, the number. Did you get a bunch of stuff for the holidays? Are you all loaded up? Get your Black Friday deals on. Monday is Cyber Monday. That's the silliest thing ever, Cyber Monday. Although it outpaced, at least with online sales, it outpaced Black Friday last year, $3.5 billion to $3 billion. So I guess there is something to that Cyber Monday thing. The theory was in the past that people didn't have very fast internet at home, so they'd wait till Monday and then do their shopping at work. That's kind of a nutty idea. We don't wait till Monday to do our shopping anymore, do we? But on the other hand, I would imagine did anybody get any fist fights on Black Friday? Did gunplay break out? I don't know. Seems like it would be a lot safer online. You don't have to get up early in the morning. But if you do, you're in bed when you're shopping. I don't have any numbers yet for Black Friday, but I imagine it was a big shopping day. Everybody, I know traffic was terrible around all the outlet malls and the shopping malls in our area. What'd you get? I saw somebody in the chat room got a nice TV. You know, it'd be interesting if the net neutrality rules pass December 14th, the anti-net neutrality, the new rules pass that allow your ISP to shape your bandwidth, we say that euphemistically, to decide what you can and can't see and how much you pay and how much the other guy pays and all that stuff. Be interesting to see what happens next year on Cyber Monday and Black Friday. You know, what kind of online shopping? You know, I mean, I can imagine a scenario where your ISP, I can see my ISP, Comcast, doing this. Say, yeah, if you want access to Amazon, let's see, who would they go to? Would they go to me? No, I already pay enough. They'd probably go to Amazon. Hey, Amazon, if you want access to our customers, our millions of customers, you're going to have to pay us a little extra for that access. A little toll road. How about that? That'd be interesting, wouldn't it? Be a good payday for Comcast. I'm not sure how good it would be for the rest of us. Because, of course, what does Amazon do? Well, they just put it all in the prices, right? They just mark up everything a penny and everything's all right. Everybody's happy. So we end up paying for it, don't we? It's an interesting situation, this net neutrality thing. I don't think the general public cares that much about it. Maybe you do. Maybe because you listen to the show, you know about it. First of all, because it's a terrible name, net neutrality. What does that even mean? Maybe we should say we'd like to ban internet discrimination. Even that doesn't kind of make a lot. Because I think people don't even think of the internet as just hot and cold running websites, right? They just pour into my browser whenever I ask for it. It's kind of a miracle of the 21st century. You just open up a computer, you click a button, and all of a sudden something shows up. You know, you can buy stuff, and then 2 days later it actually shows up on your doorstep. You can watch a movie. It's just kind of this free-flowing stuff. We don't really think about much, do we? Well, we might have to at some point. I mean, the FCC has decided to completely ignore, even though they're required to, the comments of the public to to just dismantle this whole protection of the internet. They say, well, we didn't have it 2 years ago. This will be the great internet we had a few years ago. Yeah, yeah. There's some examples, though, of companies not behaving too well. You remember when Netflix wasn't very usable on Comcast because they were in a fight? They wanted Netflix to pay money. Netflix said, what, to pay money to access your customers? Yeah. Netflix said no. Netflix got worse and worse. Do you remember that? When you really couldn't use Netflix if you're a Comcast customer? I do. Eventually, Netflix paid up and it all got better again. That's what we're talking about. That's happened. That's the great internet of 2 years ago? I don't think so. But it's hard to get people to care about it, you know, and partly because we've fought this battle before and won, but I think we're going to lose this time. December 14th, the commissioners of the FCC will vote, eliminating all regulation of internet service providers. It's not regulation of the internet. Don't get fooled by that. Oh, we don't want any government regulation of the internet. No, it's not. It's not. It's the exact opposite. It's government keeping internet service providers from messing with the internet. Hands off. Comcast blocked BitTorrent for a while, too. Remember that? Because they said, well, that's people are using that to steal music, except they weren't just using BitTorrent to steal music. They were using it for a lot of other things, including downloading my podcasts legally, distributions of Linux legally, lots of stuff legally. But Comcast didn't like it, so they turned it off. They can do it. Fortunately, their customers got upset and they changed their mind. And I wonder if the FCC might have gotten into it a little bit, just a little bit. FCC did get into it a couple of years ago. Remember when Verizon, which, by the way, big internet service provider, not just in phones, but also in homes. But on your phone, if you had a Verizon phone, Verizon was sending out a unique identifier, actually attaching it to you, a unique identifier that they would then sell to anybody who paid the fee, so that websites and advertisers and so forth could identify you on the internet, collect information about you on the internet. You know, when Verizon got caught doing this, the FCC caught them and fined them, and they stopped. I don't think that would happen anymore either. We want a light hand on the internet. Hey, there's a program you should not buy called Computer Cop. COP. It's billed as an internet safety program, you know, that keeps your kids safe. And the way it keeps your kids safe is it puts a keystroke logger on your computer that takes note of everything that's typed in the computer and then sends it to an email server to send it to you. And then you can see what your kids are doing on the internet. Internet safety, we call it. It was distributed free by many law enforcement and government agencies. 240 agencies distribute it. Often as a CD with a picture of some elected law enforcement official, a sheriff, a mayor, a district attorney, right on the cover there. See, I'm giving you this internet safety free. It's a first step to protect children online. In Arizona, the Maricopa County district attorney's press officer got this together, made marketing materials, said perfect election. Oh, the marketing materials for Computer Cop said perfect election and fundraising tool. Well, it turns out the Electronic Frontier Foundation, good group, another group, by the way, against this new FCC repeal of net neutrality. The Electronic Frontier Foundation said, that's a security problem because it's transmitting everything you type on the keyboard without encryption in the clear over the internet to an email server when it's being mailed out again. In other words, anybody who knew you were using this software could capture your keystrokes, get your passwords, your credit card numbers. And then to make matters worse, when they pitched themselves to law enforcement agencies, they circulated a bogus letter of endorsement from an official in the Treasury Department. Treasury Department just concluded its investigation and said, yeah, no, that was bogus. I don't know what's going to happen to Computer Cop, but if you're in San Diego County and your district attorney offers it to you for free, don't take it. Don't install it. If you got it, uninstall it. It's a bad idea. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your... we'll start calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Ooh, look who's there. Happy Thanksgiving, Kim Schaffer.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Did you have a nice Thanksgiving?
I did.
Yeah. What did you do?
It was more of a Friendsgiving. I sent my parents away to spend time with their brother, or with my brother, and I ended up just having a Friendsgiving with prime rib and
the first time I heard that word this year, and I love it, Friendsgiving. Yeah, I love that idea.
I see my family all the time, so you know, may as well just spend time with people I don't see that often.
Yeah. Well, that's what you're doing right now, spending time with people you don't see at all, answering the phone, lining up wonderful people to join us for the, you know, I don't think of this as the Thanksgiving episode. This is the post-Black Friday episode. Did you do any shopping yesterday?
Not a single bit, and I'm proud to say
Oh, man. We could barely get out of the house. We have a factory outlet mall near our house.
Oh, yes.
And the line to get in was incredible.
You needed to go the other direction.
We had to go the opposite direction. Yeah, it was wild.
Yeah, no, I heard that the average people spend on Black Friday is about $1,000.
Wow.
I'm like, I didn't.
Wow. Wow. Well, I think of it as amateur hour. I spend all year long. So
right? You do. You spend enough for all of us, actually.
I don't need to spend on, oh, man. Sometimes I look at all the gear and I think, what was I thinking? I could have saved that and retired early. But no, I do that for you. I do it so that you guys can,
I can tell you whether
it's
good or not.
I have to find out. It's my job.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of where Neil from Phoenix is going to take you right now.
Oh.
He might be having a little buyer's remorse. He wants to get your take on it.
All right. Thank you, Kim Schaffer. Hello, Neil. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How was your Thanksgiving?
Very nice. Family, relaxed, watched a bunch. I think there were 3 football games, I think. I seem to remember. It's all a blur now. It was a lot of fun. How was yours?
Oh, I'm always grateful for you. I always give thanks for your show. I always enjoy them. Learn quite a bit, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you.
So here's the question. I went and bought an iPhone 8 Plus when it came out. I bought every iPhone Plus since the 6 Plus.
Yeah.
I've been happy with them.
Yeah.
8 Plus came around. And I heard you all talking about it on this show and all, and you know, Backbreak Weekly and so forth, and iOS Today. And I said, no, I can get by with an 8 Plus, and I've been very happy with it. In fact, I went to a wedding, my sister's wedding, or my nephew's wedding, I should say, and took wonderful pictures with it.
You bet.
And it was very pleasing. But then I heard all about the iPhone 10, and now I'm wondering, even though I'm not unhappy with the iPhone 8 Plus, did I make a terrible
mistake? You have iPhone envy, my friend. And this is what Apple wanted you to have all along. So I think, you know, I also bought the 8 Plus. And again, I knew, of course, that I was also going to get an iPhone 10. I realized that Apple was going to get an extra $1,000 out of me for 2 months while I was waiting for the iPhone 10. But I did it anyway. But I have an excuse. You know, this is my job. I think the iPhone 10 is definitely the best iPhone made. Now, there are some, I'll make you feel a little bit better. The difference between the two cameras is minimal. It's physically the same hardware with one little exception. There's optical image stabilization on both lenses instead of just the big lens on the 8. But that's not a big difference. So the camera, you would get equally good pictures with the 8 Plus or the 10. The 10 does more stuff computationally because it has a much faster... Actually, it doesn't have a faster processor. It's the same processor, same amount of memory, same amount of storage. The difference, the really big difference, and some people this is a negative, is they're swapping out your fingerprint reader, Touch ID, for a face recognition system called Face ID. And that has its pros and cons. Touch ID works pretty much every time, right? Unless your hands are wet or you got gloves, mittens on, it pretty much works every time. It works very quickly. You put your finger on the home button and the phone unlocks and is ready to use. Face ID works nearly every time, but there's enough times that for me, at least once or twice a day, I have to enter in my PIN. So I'm of the opinion Face ID isn't quite as reliable as Touch ID. Apple says it's more secure, but we can only go by what Apple says, which isn't really very handy. You know, they haven't offered any proof. They say that Touch ID has a potential of a false positive, somebody unlocking your phone that's not you, of about 1 in 50,000. They say Face ID, it's 1 in a million, but it isn't in some respects because twins can unlock. And it looks like even kids who look a lot like their parents can unlock it. So I'm not yet sold on Face ID. And I know at least one security expert who says I will not use it. I do not trust it. On the other hand, in terms of convenience, it's great because you don't have to, you just hold the phone up and look at it and it unlocks. And you can have your bank do that. You can have your password manager do that. So it's so fast, it's almost as if as soon as you raise the phone, it's ready to use. But I'll point this out too. You raise the phone, it unlocks, then you still have to physically, with one hand, swipe it up. So there's an extra step involved that I'm not crazy about either. You can turn that off in the iPhone 8 Plus. You can have it just unlock with your fingerprint reader and be ready to go. Let me think. What else? Phone quality is the same. The biggest difference is the visible difference, of course, is the screen. The iPhone 10 screen doesn't have, because it has no home button, it has the screen goes all the way to the edge of the phone. But that's a negative too. I'm trying to sell it. I'm trying to downsell it for you. The other negative is it's a smaller usable screen area than you have on your iPhone 8 Plus or a 7 Plus or a 6 Plus, 6S Plus, because there's extra stuff. There's the notch at the top for Face ID, and there's some controls at the bottom because you have a new user interface that involves swiping with your fingers in various directions. So the available real estate on the iPhone 10 is smaller. It's physically smaller in the hand as well. I kind of like that. I don't mind the smaller screen, but you might. And if you look at comparisons of screenshots between the two, you'll see there is, in fact, less real estate on the iPhone 10. It also costs a couple hundred bucks more. So I don't know if I've reassured you, but I think the iPhone 8 Plus is fine. It's the same processor, same camera, same software. It's an LCD screen on an OLED screen. I think, frankly, if you're happy with the iPhone 8, I'm not sure I would abandon it. Don't get iPhone envy.
Well, thank you. I was going to give it up, but I wanted to hear more that I haven't made some terrible kind of mistakes.
You haven't. You haven't. I do think that this is the future of the iPhone, so that next year all the iPhones will be like the iPhone 10. You have the last iPhone with a Touch ID with a fingerprint reader, but I bet you will give it great resale value because there will be a segment of the market come next year who will say, but wait, I want a new phone and I don't want this one. Okay?
Well, thank you very much.
Don't feel bad. Feel good. You got a good phone. Nothing wrong with it. 8888 Ask Leo. Hey, coming up in just a second, our home theater guy, Scott Wilkinson, talking about Black Friday TVs. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Bump de bump. Ladies and gentlemen, here from his smash engagement at the Hollywood Bowl, Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru.
Woohoo!
And he joins us each week to talk, of course, about TVs and stereos. But I bet you this week, all anybody wants to talk about is, did I buy the right thing? Did I do the right thing?
Yeah, a lot of people are asking that in the chat room.
I saw a picture. Actually, it was weird because it was, I guess Black Friday spread worldwide. It was Black Friday in Brazil of people fighting over 40-inch high-def TVs. was there like a doorbuster deal yesterday that just everybody went crazy about here in the States?
Well, I don't know. Probably. I mean, I don't look at doorbusters too much because those are typically the captive brands of TV like Element and Scepter and Insignia. And by captive brand, I mean, you know, the brand of Best Buy or the brand of other stores.
Who makes those? I mean, they're captive brands, but big companies must make them, right?
Big companies must make them. And yeah, I don't know exactly who it is. I focused more on the name brands that were going on sale. And I think, as I mentioned last week, LG put most of its OLED TVs on pretty serious sale, 30% or more, which is really great. Vizio had a slightly less dramatic savings, but they also, many of their TVs were on sale as well. Another one that I really like that some people in the chat room seem to have gotten is the Sony X900E, which is an LCD TV with what's called full array local dimming backlighting, which I always prefer over edge lighting. There's two ways to get light out of an LCD TV. One is putting LEDs around the edge of the screen. The other is to put them in a full array behind the actual screen. And that's always better, particularly if it implements something called local dimming. So if this part of the image is dark, those LEDs can go dim. And if this part of the image is bright, those LEDs can go bright. And so you get a better contrast, better uniformity, just a better overall picture quality, generally speaking. Now, there are a few exceptions, but for the most part, it's true. And the Sony X900E was on pretty significant sale at many stores, and I was very happy to see that. And I am happy to see that some of the people in the chat room here went for it, and I'm sure they'll be very happy about it. Just be sure to pick movie mode or cinema mode right out of the box if you're not going to do any other adjustments. I've said this before. You do that, and you're going to get a much more accurate picture than whatever it comes out of the box in.
Okay.
So that's my thing there. Now, LG OLEDs, some people in the chat room have asked, which one should I get? I always say get the least expensive one because the panels are all the same. And the LG B7 and C7 are almost the same, except one has a silver bezel and one has a black bezel. Otherwise, they're the same. The panel's the same. Processing's the same. And they're much less expensive than the high-end LGs. And so, to me, OLED, as I've said many times, is the best picture quality available today. Somebody in the chat room is saying, I want to replace my 15-year-old CRT TV. Yeah, that's a good thing. I would agree. That's time to replace that thing. Although CRTs do have the advantage of super deep blacks that only OLED TVs can now match and even exceed. But if you're going to get an LCD TV, it's not going to look as deep dark black, the lowest possible light output, as an OLED or a CRT. That was one of its claims to fame. The other claim to fame it had was lack of motion blur. You know, when something's moving fast across the screen or a camera is panning fast, everything looks very blurry on an LCD TV, even an OLED, because of the way that they display the image. CRTs didn't have that trouble. So we're losing something. Neither did plasmas, but they're gone too. So in the terms of motion blur, the best technologies are no longer available, which is disappointing.
I would have thought OLED didn't have that problem.
No, I'm afraid it does.
Yeah.
And the reason it does is the way that it puts images onto the screen,
right.
Which is a process called sample and hold.
Oh,
and basically,
yeah, yeah. Yeah,
puts the entire picture on the screen and holds it there for the entire frame.
Right.
And then the next frame comes along, and then the next one, and the next one. And when you do it that way, things in motion tend to look blurrier.
Yeah.
Plasma solved
the stuff in between.
Exactly.
It's almost a slower frame rate.
It's
60p?
The same frame rate.
Yeah. See, that's
what's puzzling. Modern TVs can do 60p, and that certainly helps.
Yeah.
As long as the content coming in is 60p, which for movies is super rare. There's only one movie I know of that does that off of an UHD Blu-ray disc, Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. And some people don't like it. They think it looks the same as frame interpolation, which both LCDs and OLEDs do. They insert synthetic frames in between the real ones to make it look.
What do they call it? There's different names for this frame interpolation.
Yeah.
What do they call it?
Well, motion interpolation.
You can't look in the menu for frame interpolation or motion. They won't
say
that.
No, you can't. Every company has their own name for it. LG, it's called True Motion, I believe.
Yeah.
And Sony has its own name. This is a real problem.
I saw a great tweet on Thanksgiving. A guy said, my Thanksgiving gift to all my relatives is to sneak in to their living room and turn off frame interpolation on their TV.
Exactly. Many
Just turn
people
it off.
Hate it.
They don't know it. They don't know it's on. It's generally on by default, right? 120 frames.
Yes. Yep. It is, and it makes the image look like. They call it the soap opera effect because it makes it look like video.
Yeah.
Now, when you're watching video, actual video, like a newscast or something that was shot for video specifically, it doesn't make that big a difference. But when you're looking at a movie, then it starts making a big difference. So you have to kind of choose between, do I want the motion to look sharp and not to look cinematic, to look more video-like, or do I want it to look more like a real movie?
Yeah.
And live through the motion blur? And most geeks like me prefer the cinematic view that has more motion blur in
Although
it.
Although it's funny because, you know, we've talked about this before. We're conditioned by the old film motion pictures to a very slow frame rate of 24 frames per second.
Yes.
And to think of that aesthetically is pleasing, but it really isn't technically very good.
No, it isn't.
That's why people like director James Cameron are lobbying for movies
with higher frame
rates and higher resolutions.
Yep. I'm still waiting to find out if Avatar 2, 3, 4, and 5, which are in the works and being planned.
Oh, that's terrifying.
I know. If they're going to – I'm sure they're going to be shot at a high frame rate. I don't know whether it's 48 or 60 yet, but – I hope to find out.
What kind of cameras? Point. They're not using film cameras, obviously.
They're using digital cameras. Yeah, like the Red or the Sony F65.
So there are cameras that are capable of these high frame rates.
Oh, absolutely.
And of course, they're at least 4K, usually more than that, right?
More than that now, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And high dynamic range. So you're getting it all in these new cameras. And we're getting more and more TVs and projectors and so on that can display all of that, which is really great because it looks so much better. I just last night went and saw Coco, Pixar's new movie. Beautiful, beautiful high dynamic range, beautiful color.
I bet that'll be a good DVD.
It'll be a great one. Now, that's not on camera. That's an animation.
Well, so that's all in the computer. Often the best camera.
Yeah.
Right.
Although I was surprised at how much motion blur there was in that movie.
Was it as good as Trolls Part 2? Scott Wilkinson. He's the editor at the AVS Forum. That's what he talks about incessantly, all this stuff, audio and video. And you find his articles there, avsforum.com, and you'll find him here almost every week talking about home theater. Thank you, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls, 8888-ASK-LEO after this. Now, if... there's a high frame rate movie like Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk or The Hobbit. Can you get a Blu-ray that has the high frame rate and play it back? You can.
Yep. Well, as long as the studio publishes it.
But assuming that they made it available, the players could handle it.
Yep.
And so
I've got Billy Lynn, and that plays at 60 frames out of my Oppo UHD Blu-ray player. Absolutely.
Okay. And can you notice the difference?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, man. Huge difference. Huge. It does not look like traditional cinema.
Right.
And some people object to that. Right. I don't. I find it to be just beautiful. I use it as test material on TV reviews all the time.
Yeah.
And I've heard a number of people say they didn't think the movie was very good. I disagree. I think it's really good.
Well, good. Maybe I'll buy the let me order the the UHD Blu-ray.
The UHD Blu-ray, absolutely. Yeah.
I will get it.
They shot it. They actually, Ang Lee shot it at 120 frames per second.
Nothing
so it's
will
already,
play that back, right?
No, nothing will play that back.
Yeah.
but the Blu-ray was released at 60.
Right.
And it looks very different than your typical movie.
Let me give you the con, and you can take it over. You're going to be able to do the top of the hour?
Sure.
Well? All right, great.
Yep, happy to do it.
All right, let me put you in the picture here.
So let's see. Cameron Cat got a 65-inch LG OLED B7 for $2,099. Crazy good picture. You're right about that. And, man, $2,100. For a 65-inch LG OLED, that is really, really good. It's even less than the Black Friday deals I saw, I think. I'd have to go back and look now. But basically, that's a screaming deal. That is really, really good. Mick says, I went to the living room to see how the Ohio State-Michigan game looked on that 55-inch Sharp. Earlier we had a discussion about he had just gotten, I guess, a Sharp TV on Black Friday. And on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd give it a 3. Exactly what you said. Action looks bad, and it does. Well, there you go. And if it looks bad because it looks kind of soap opera-y, then motion interpolation is turned on, which, as Leo said, it is typically by default. And I don't remember what Sharp calls that function. They have some name for it. And if you turn it off, you're going to get more blur, but it's going to look less video-y, plastic-y. Cheers to Sybil. Live long and prosper, my Star Trek friend. Friendly Manitoba, good to see you. Tech William. iPhone 3270 got the Onkyo TXR 373 receiver. Pretty good. I like Onkyo products quite a bit. I saw a couple on Black Friday sale. I saw the 656 for, I don't know, a couple $100, maybe something like that. Einstein is asking, is the max refresh rate on 4K TVs 120 hertz? Yeah, there might be one or two at 240, but basically, yes, it's 120 hertz. $2,000 for a TV, old soldier. Buy the marketing guys a drink. Yeah, $2,000 is a lot of money, no doubt about it.
All right, Scotty. Thank happy you. To stick around. Stick all around, right. See you in a bit.
Yep.
Leo Laporte. The Tech Guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Jimmy is on the line. He's next from Ohio. Hello, Jimmy.
Hey, Leo.
Thanks for hanging on. Welcome. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm hoping for a big favor, and this is kind of the last resort. My friend lost her 15-year-old son in 2015.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And his Instagram account was just deactivated for inactivity.
Right.
And I'm just hoping desperately that maybe somebody from Instagram's listening and they can get in touch. I've already gone through the official channels. His mother has gone through.
Send me an email. I have a channel through to the founder, Kevin Systrom, and I'll see what I can do for you. Remember, it's owned by Facebook now. So another avenue to pursue is Facebook. Because they probably, you know, they've always been fairly smart about Facebook accounts when this kind of thing happens. You know, they can set them up as memorial sites and so forth. And I don't know if she's done that as well, but that might be something to look into.
So I think that was never done, which is probably why it
right,
got
right.
Deleted.
She can make it a memorialized site. It may not be too late for that as well. Do me a favor, send me an email to leo@techguylabs.com. And I will forward it on to Kevin Systrom, the founder. And, you know, his hands may be tied. I don't know. But we can at least get you to the top there and see if we can do something about it.
Oh, thank you so much.
My pleasure. My pleasure. I'm so sorry that happened, and I'm glad to help. Yeah, because there's probably a lot of memories and pictures there that you she'd like to have.
Yeah, and I'm sure, I don't know for sure, but I'm sure his friends probably too go there.
Sure. Once you regain access to it, there are ways, of course, to download those images, to print them. There are a number of services that will take your Instagram photos and make a Instagram book out of it and things like that.
So Chumley and Tech William in the chat room were a lot of help with that.
Good.
So just
okay.
Props to them.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad you called. I'm very, very sorry about that, and we'll see what we can do. Can't make any promises, but I can at least send an email to the guy in charge.
Thank you so much.
We'll see what we do. Yeah, my pleasure, Jimmy. I'm sorry about that. Orly is in San Diego, our next call. Hi, Orly.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Listen, I don't want to put any undue pressure on you, but my husband swears by you.
As long as he doesn't swear at me, I'm okay.
Yeah, that's true.
You can do both. It's okay. Both are allowed. Well, so you wanted to know more about web hosting? Are you looking to set up a website?
Yeah. So here's my little story. I actually invented something, And I'm in the process of getting it patented. And so now I'm trying to figure out marketing. So I wanted to create a website, and I've been looking through reviews online of different websites, and I'm getting wrapped around the axle. I don't understand it because you talk about WordPress a lot.
Yeah, I use WordPress.com. So they're a sponsor too. So yeah, so basically, at its fundamental, every website is very, very simple. When you connect to a website, you are connecting to a computer, a personal computer, that has some stuff on it. Images, text, information about how to draw the page, how to what fonts to use, what images, where to put things. That's in a language called HTML, hypertext markup language. There's also style sheets, CSS. So there's a bunch of, and really they're all, except for the images and, you know, any audio or video, they're all text files. So they're just sitting on a hard drive on a server. When you enter in a website's name, your browser goes out over the internet, finds that server, that one and only computer, says, give me those things. And if you give it to me, I know how to take HTML and CSS and images and text and make a beautiful web page. And that's what the browser does. It gets the raw material and makes a page out of it. So when you're talking about web hosting, what you're really doing is you're finding somebody who has a computer that's publicly available on the internet that you can put your stuff on. And of course, there's a variety of other services they may provide, but that's what a web server is. It's running a program that waits for a computer to come and say, give me your stuff. Knock, knock. It's, you know, it's Orly here. I'd like Yahoo.com. And that server serves, you know, gives it back to your browser and it renders it. So you need, if you want to have a website, you need somewhere that's doing that. Sometimes people even think about putting it in their closet at home, but that, you don't really want to do that. These web hosting companies are bad. You know, they have, you know, generators, their power's backed up, they're cooled. They have much faster connections to the internet, much, much faster than you do at home, often a million bits per second or more, sometimes billions of bits per second. So you can take advantage of that. So if a lot of people visit, you know, they find out about Orly's great invention, they go, oh, I got to find out about it. They can all go to that place at the same time and it won't choke. So they're more powerful than your average PC in your closet. Now, there are companies that do this and just give you the bare metal. You know, you can go to a company, we used to use a company IBM owns called SoftLayer. They have network operations centers in a variety of cities. Dallas was where they started, but they're also on the East Coast and the West Coast. Your stuff lives on a computer in one of those centers, those data centers, and you pay them. In fact, you can buy a whole computer or you can say, I want to share it with other people. That's cheaper. That's called a shared hosting, one computer, many sites. Just depends how much you want to pay. And then the way it worked at SoftLayer, I'm responsible for going there, installing, putting my stuff up there so that there's pages. There's also people who offer hosting plus. WordPress.com is one of them, but there's also Blogger, there's Squarespace, there's Tumblr. Many, many companies that do this. And they have software that makes it very easy for you to put your stuff on their computers. They still serve it up. Tumblr is a good example. This is a Yahoo property. TUMBLR.com. It's free to set up a site. You can put links up there and so forth. You'll get an address. It'll be something like Orly.tumblr.com. It won't be, you know, Orly'sGreatInvention.com. But that's serving up those content, and it gives you an interface that's easy to do. And it gives you templates so that you can say, without knowing anything about design, you could say, oh, that's a pretty one. I'd like it to look like that. WordPress is a little more fancy than that. They have, you know, they also have business offerings and so forth. Okay. They're not free, though, so, you know.
Can I ask you something? Here's where I get a little confused. I mean, I understand that on a high level. But as I'm looking through this list, this one particular review site that lists a whole bunch of hosts.
Don't trust those, by the way. Most of those are affiliated with some site or other and have affiliate links. They make money when you buy. So you can't trust those reviews at all.
Okay, but here's where I'm getting confused, because many of the hosts
Hold on just a second. I do want to continue this. So we got to take a break for news at the top of the hour. I'm going to hold you over if you don't mind. And I want to break through the confusion because this is something everybody ought to know. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So, Orly, can you hold on for a few minutes?
Thank you.
Okay, because I want to answer all your questions. This is stuff people just kind of take for granted. I think they ought to know. So I like doing this. So hang on.
Yes, sir.
All right. Meanwhile, my good friend and compadre, Santa Claus, is here. And he brought you some nice TVs for Christmas.
I did. And I do want to say, anyone watching from L.A., next Sunday, December 3rd, Tuba Christmas.
I forgot to mention. I'll mention it when we come back, Scott. I apologize.
Would you?
Yeah, of course.
That'd be great. I forgot.
Sunday.
Next Sunday, December 3rd,
okay.
7 p.m., all the information is at TubaChristmasLA.com.
Fortunately, you'll be able to plug it again
next Saturday.
Next Saturday. Is it XMAS?
No, it's spelled out, Christmas.
TubaChristmasLA.com, all right.
TubaChristmasLA.com.
I'll give you a plug when we get back.
Great,
all
thanks.
Yours.
Twisted Mister, sorry, no bagpipes, only tubas. yes, Tuba Christmas returns. This is the 42nd year in L.A. and the 44th of Tuba Christmas overall. It happens all over the country and other places around the world as well, but mostly in the U.S., 200 cities or something. So if you're not in L.A., go to the main website, which is TubaChristmas.com, and click on Where is Tuba Christmas? And there you can find you then select what state you're in, and it tells you how many Tuba Christmas concerts there are and what are the details. But in L.A., I'm the director of Tuba Christmas L.A., so I'm the MC of the show. And look, there's a picture of me for those of you watching the and Mike Heiss, he has almost time for Hanukkah in Santa Monica. My wife, Joanna, is actually got a new arrangement this year she's going to sing called O Ihr Kleine Lichterlech, which is, oh, you beautiful little candles of the Hanukkah tradition. And it's in Yiddish. We have a couple of Tuba Hanukkah songs in Hebrew, but this one's in Yiddish. So that's going to be pretty cool. Emily the Strange, no sackbut Christmas. Not, I'm afraid not. The tubas do not require amplification 9.5. No, you get 100 tubas together, you do not need amplification. The hall where we're playing is gorgeous, and you wouldn't need amplification in there anyway. 1,200-seat auditorium, but beautiful acoustics, really great. Juas Dwis. Talk about motion blur. All right, I talked a lot about motion blur before. So anybody else have any other questions for me? We've been talking a lot about frame interpolation, and I was right. LG calls it true motion, TRUMOTION. And somebody asked me about whether or not it would be good for sports. And the answer is yes. It's bad for movies, but good for sports. And I should have made that point before, because sports typically are shot at 30 frames per second because it's video. It's meant to be shown on TV rather than in a movie theater. And so they shoot it typically at 30 or even 60. And so turning on motion interpolation either won't do anything or it won't look nearly as different as without it. Whereas with a movie at 24 frames per second, it looks very different. And it does. And you have to decide whether you like that or not. But for sports, which you want sharp motion, right, because balls are flying through the air and people are running around, then you definitely want sharper motion. And so I would turn on frame interpolation for sports, but maybe not for movies. Let's see. Can you imagine bagpipe Christmas? Oh, man, that would be something. let's see here. Anybody else got any questions for me? I'm looking around here. Ah, yes. Mike Heiss. Good to see you, Mike. Yes, we're having a food truck at Tuba Christmas. This year it's Roni Macaroni with the world's best mac and cheese, so they say, but other stuff too. It's not only mac and cheese. In fact, they sell veggie dogs, which I love. I don't eat regular hot dogs, but they sell veggie dogs, so I'm definitely going to get one of those. Thank you, Mick. I appreciate that. iPhone 3270. Have either Leo or I tried hooking up an Atmos system to a PC? No, I have not tried that. How does Windows deal with it? That's a good question. If you had a Blu-ray, say, with an Atmos soundtrack, and you wanted to play it on a PC, how would you do that? Would the PC be able to do it? I honestly don't know. Some streaming services, and I can't remember off the top of my head which ones, do provide Atmos. Netflix might be one of them. I can't remember now. But I have not tried to do that from a PC. And if you what I was thinking of was maybe if you streamed an Atmos title from Netflix or whoever provides Atmos soundtracks, you might be able to get Atmos that way. The PC would have to have HDMI out, and it would have to be able to pass the bitstream, basically, the Atmos bitstream from the PC to an AV receiver. I don't think you could hook up speakers directly to a PC. You need some sort of amplification anyway, and you need decoding, which the PCs typically don't do. So you would have an AV receiver and an Atmos speaker system, or an Atmos soundbar, perhaps, of which there are a few, and that then you could do it. So basically, the PC needs to do is pass the bitstream, the encoded Atmos bitstream, onto the AVR. And I don't know if they typically do that. Let's see. How do you tell your Onkyo, for instance, you want to use it as 5.2.2 Atmos versus just plain old 7.2? Well, when it gets the bitstream, when it gets the Atmos bitstream, it automatically says, "Oh, you're Atmos. Okay, I can deal with that." And it switches to 5.2.2. That is five channels around you, two subwoofers, both of which play the same signal. But we're talking about the speaker configuration here, not the signal configuration. So two subwoofers and then two overhead speakers. And many Onkyo players will do that. AVRs, rather, will do that. User 3784, Vuvuzela Christmas. Yeah, I'll dig that. I totally dig that. Of course, you can't get very many notes on a Vuvuzela, so you can't play Christmas carols, sadly. Somebody earlier was asking me about a burn-in on OLED versus LCD. And OLED does have a slight... it has a slight possibility of burn-in if you leave a static image on the screen for many hours, probably days more likely, or if you leave it turned on for days to a news channel with a ticker at the bottom or video games with a static element like a scoreboard, something like that, then yes, it's possible. There you go.
Thank you, Scotty. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, augmented reality, all that jazz. My phone number, 8888-ASK-LEO, if you want to call in with a question or a comment or a suggestion. We also have a great website, techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com, and that's a place you can go, and I can put all the information we do, everything we talk about. And I say I, but it's really not me. It's James DeRuvo is writing right now. Hi, James. And Josh Windisch, who also will put the audio and the video up, and they make a great site where you can go, you can search, you can find anything I talk about. So you don't have to write anything down. You can even listen to the show or watch it after the fact. Yeah, we make video too. TechGuyLabs.com. I wanted to mention, I forgot, when Scott Wilkinson was on, our home theater expert, that he does every year a Tuba Christmas. Now, if you're in the L.A. area, this is coming up a week from tomorrow, December 3rd, in Los Angeles. It is a bunch of tubas, like a lot of tubas, playing Christmas songs. And Scott is the director. He is a windy fella himself. And you can hear the performances. It's a wonderful event. They've done it every year for many years. And I just wanted to mention TubaChristmasLA.com if you'd like to see Scott performing Tuba Christmas. Celebrate the holidays with the glorious sound of tubas. And the reason I bring this up is, well, not only because I have a strange fondness for Scott, but Orly and I were talking about websites. And this is a really good example of, he's got an event, he wants to promote it. He goes, this looks like it's WordPress, I'm not sure, but he goes and he registers a domain name, TubaChristmasLA.com, goes to somewhere like WordPress, sets the site up, and now people can go there, buy tickets, find out more, that kind of thing. So, Orly, you said you had some questions. We were talking about setting up Orly's website for her great invention.
Yeah. So, actually, while I was on hold, I was reading this a little more carefully. But what I was saying to you is that I was looking at several sites that had the reviews, which you told me to take with a grain of salt.
Exactly.
Here's my specific point of confusion. I know that one of your sponsors is WordPress.
Right.
And as I'm looking through these reviews, it seems like many of the sites actually mention WordPress. But as I was looking closer...
Yeah. So WordPress, it can be run two ways. You can have, and I did this for years, you can have your own site. In my case, it was at SoftLayer, as I mentioned earlier. And then you are responsible for installing the WordPress software on that, running it, maintaining it, keeping it up to date. Or you can go to WordPress. That's from WordPress.org, by the way, to get the software. WordPress.com, their business side, will do it all for you on their hosting. And so WordPress.com is like Squarespace.com. By the way, Scott tells me that that's a Squarespace site. Squarespace. And it's, by the way, the concert's free, the Tuba Christmas. So he went to Squarespace, did the same thing, set up a site. They host it, and they have software that you use. So my suggestion is to go to somewhere that does the software for you. Because unless you've decided you want to learn how to be a webmaster... Is that in your list of things to do?
Not in this life, no.
Then I strongly suggest that you go somewhere that has the we call it what WordPress is a content management system or CMS. It's something that you can in the website enter your write your article, write your piece, put pictures up and stuff, press publish. And then it has software that will publish it, which merely means putting those appropriate files on that server's hard drive so that when somebody requests it, they will load it. The content management part of it is a big part of it. And unless you want to learn how to run content management systems, I would suggest you go to a web hosting company that has a good CMS built in. And so for Google has one called Blogger at blogspot.com. Squarespace.com, WordPress.com. Another good one, as I mentioned, is Yahoo's Tumblr.com. All of those are doing the hosting behind the scenes, but you're not really aware of that. What you're aware of is using their software, really, to post your content. And that's really the way most people should go. So a lot of those sites that you're going to are talking about DreamHost and 1+1 and companies that are server companies. They may have site-building software on top of them, but their main business is selling servers. That's an old-school way of doing it. I don't recommend, especially since you don't want to become a web expert, I recommend anybody who wants a website, go to a company, a CMS company, a company that provides you with the content management piece. That's so much better.
So for me, who wants to do some marketing on it and also be able to take orders on it, which means credit cards, are you saying I should look at Squarespace?
Squarespace has a very good e-commerce system. When you're selling stuff, that it adds an additional piece. WordPress just put its e-commerce in, and it's supposedly very good. I haven't used it yet. But then there are also companies like Shopify and BigCommerce that specialize in online commerce. And they also have website-building tools, but it's centered around the idea of a shopping cart and selling things. Shopify and BigCommerce are also very good solutions. If you need e-commerce, those are very good solutions. Squarespace might be a good one for you to look at. I think it's a little pricey, or can be a little bit pricey, but it has. And by the way, the one more piece to this is you're going to go to somebody who will help you register a unique domain name. You don't want to be Orly.wordpress.com. You want to be Orly's Great Invention.com. And so most of these companies will do that for you. Certainly WordPress will. Squarespace will. Blogger will not, I don't think, unless you have to do that yourself. Tumblr, you have to do it yourself.
Have you heard of SiteGround? Because I'm looking at this and it says that they're officially recommended by WordPress.org.
That's different. That means that they're a server company. They probably have a one button install of WordPress, but you're going to be responsible for your WordPress software. Do not do that. You do not want to be that responsible for that, especially because all of this software will have regular security updates. And if you don't apply them, you will be hacked. Because you now have, it's unlike, you know, your computer at home goes on the internet, but doesn't sit there, you know, all the time waiting to be hacked. Your website does. So keeping a website secure is a very high priority. Do not go to somewhere where you're doing your own installation and management. And that would be that site. Don't do that.
Okay.
You want to go to, you know, WordPress, Tumblr, Squarespace, Blogspot. You want to go to one of those.
Okay, well, you made me a little smarter, although I think my head just exploded.
Well, actually, it's going to be easier. And I understand why you're getting, as you say, a good analogy, wrapped around the axle. If you start to look at all of the sites that offer hosting, this is, frankly, it's old-fashioned. That is how we used to do it. And you don't need to do that. Now, our site, techguylabs.com, runs on that kind of site, but we have trained professionals managing it. You know, we spend a lot of money. We spend $250,000 designing and building the site, and we spend probably $6,000 or $7,000 a month maintaining it. You don't want to do that, do you?
I don't think so.
No, you do not. You want something very simple. I would look at for e-commerce. Given you want to sell stuff, Squarespace and WordPress, either one would be great for you.
Squarespace affiliated with the Square that you take credit cards on?
No. Although they do, I think their commerce uses Stripe, which is a very good system for commerce. Squarespace is not Square, despite the similarity in the name. Both are very good. I'd have no hesitation recommending either one for you. What you probably should do is get a trial site on both of them, see which one you feel comfortable with, which system you like better, and go with that one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. Chuck from T.O. Thousand Oaks. Hi, Chuck.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm terrific. And I suddenly realized when I was calling in, I didn't really describe my issue correctly.
That's okay.
Because I'm trying actually to follow in your footsteps and do an online video show.
Oh, that's crazy. Don't. Okay, go ahead. Oh, if I could only talk to myself 10 years ago, I might have done something differently. It's expensive, I guess, is the biggest thing. But I shouldn't talk you out of it because there's lots of good reasons to do it. So what do you want to do?
I'm not going
to
do it to the extent that you're doing it, but I'm trying to do it in a way that isn't terribly expensive.
Well, it's easier now. It used to be, actually. You can do it for, I did it kind of an old school way with multiple cameras and studio lights and very big expensive servers, and that was kind of nuts.
Well, I'm doing it the new school way with no studio.
Perfect.
No studio cameras.
Perfect.
And bringing in people on webcams.
That's
and their
a great
own,
way. Yeah.
Their own office.
Yeah. And, really, what we've learned, I'll tell you what I've learned from being a podcaster now since 2000.
All over, and I suddenly realized people don't want to pay, you know, $1,500 for a conference pass and go to a hotel necessarily. And this is a way where we can see some of the same people from that conference live and repeated. But I've run into a roadblock on YouTube And I thought I want to put this up on Facebook Live and YouTube Live and my website and maybe some other websites. And so I established a new YouTube website under my personal name, but then they allow you to set up another, you know, entity. And it was up for one day without any content at all, and it got flagged. And they allow you, you know, they give you a full page of all the different reasons why they could flag it. And they flagged my page for violating community standards. But I haven't put anything up on the page. There's nothing there to violate community standards.
So all you need to do is appeal it.
Any idea how long that might take?
It shouldn't take more than a day or two. See, it got flagged. So as you'll probably notice as you browse around on YouTube, you can, as a user, flag it anytime you want. And what happened probably is somebody ran across it, maybe a competitor, maybe somebody who knows you and doesn't like you, or just by accident and said, this is inappropriate content. And YouTube will automatically take it down until you appeal and say, no, look, there's no content. And they'll go, oh, yeah, that was dumb. And they won't. You just got reported by somebody. If there's no content there, unless the name is somehow, is the name a trademark or a bad word?
There's no bad word. The name is similar to my old conference, the name of which I own the conference.
Well, it
name.
Could be. I mean, that would be if. Yeah, I mean that. I mean, but they wouldn't know that unless somebody reported it. So you got reported. You if you appeal it and say there's no content there. They'll almost certainly automatically, you know, check through all of your stuff to make sure there's no bad words. You're not using others' trademarks. You're not in some way implying that what you're doing is owned by some other company, not affiliated with CBS Radio, that kind of thing. Make sure you're not. Those would be legitimate causes for YouTube, upon examining you, to keep you from going back up. But if it's completely benign and somebody just reported you and they just did it by accident, then they err on the side of caution because they're massive and there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of hours being uploaded every single day. So they ban it, they block it, and expect that, well, if it's really a human, he'll repeal it and then we'll look at it and we'll go, oh, yeah, never mind. No human has looked at it yet, almost, chances are. So I would just scrub through it, make sure you're not, you know, you couldn't be seen as trying to appear to be something you're not, the DuPont Radio Hour, whatever it is. And as long as it's not, you know, there's nothing like that going on in the description of the title, there's no content there, there's no reason to ban you. Now, I have to say, one of the things we have learned, as I was about to say, from podcasting for all this time is, it is more content is so much more important than anything else. You know, you can spend a lot of money on fancy sets and lights and all that stuff. And I happen to come from a professional broadcast background. And so I had those standards in my head and I tried to live up to those standards. And I think we did. But frankly, if you were starting a podcast today, I would do exactly what you're doing. I would use YouTube and Facebook Live and I wouldn't spend a lot of money on lights. Here's the key. The content rules, but you shouldn't let your production value get in the way of the content either. So if people can't, for instance, your phone was scratchy and breaking up, that's a bad thing. So you want to make sure that your quality of your audio, and if you're doing video and video, is not annoying or gets in the way of the content. But as long as people can hear you clearly and see what they want to see, it doesn't have to look like professional television. That's one thing we've really learned. It just needs to get the content across. Read the rules and make sure you haven't violated them. Obviously, there's nothing inappropriate in your feed because there's no videos there. I'm sure that they will take your appeal. Let's go down under. Trent's on the line from Australia. Hi, Trent.
Hi, Leah. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome to the show. I appreciate your calling.
No, thank you very much. Thank you for taking my call.
Where in Australia are you? It's a big country.
I'm in Adelaide, so right Adelaide. In the middle, down the bottom.
I don't know where Adelaide is. Well, it's good to talk to you. What can I do for you?
I'm a teacher at a primary school, and we're wanting to set up a multimedia lab and wanting to stream Chroma Key content around the school.
Oh, fun.
And, yeah, so kids should love that. But just wanting to sort of, I know you've done similar things, with streaming video, just wondering what kind of boxes we need to to make that happen.
So chroma key is, and just for people listening, you know, the thing the weatherman uses, he's not really standing in front of a giant map. He's standing in front of a green, completely green screen that has a map superimposed on it using the switcher. Chroma key's gotten very affordable and available. Do you want to do it live or after the fact?
I'd love to do it live because the kids still don't quite understand what's going on behind them, so they can see.
Yeah, live is, you know, live is nice, but live is a little more complicated. We use switchers from a company called Newtek, N-E-W-T-E-K. It's called the TriCaster, and it has built-in very, very sophisticated keying software. We actually don't use it because I prefer physical sets, and that was part of the big expense that I probably could have avoided, building physical sets. But because I like it to have a sense of place, and because keying, where you will spend money on good keying is the lighting. Lighting is everything. The green screen, you can just paint green, but you need to light it smoothly and evenly, and you make sure that the people in front of it aren't casting shadows on and all sorts of things like that. But given appropriate lighting, even relatively inexpensive boxes like the TriCaster do an amazing job. Kids who are watching will know that your students aren't in space or in Afghanistan or wherever, or in front of the Eiffel Tower, wherever you want to do it. Now, there are software solutions that you can do on a PC. They're not going to work as well as a TriCaster, but they will be a lot more affordable. ManyCam, David Liz in the chat room tells me, is $50, works on Windows PC, and will do chroma key and all of that. That sounds like a good solution. I haven't used it. ManyCam. We just had to take a quick break. There are other solutions that you can use, like Wirecast. I think Wirecast does a chroma key software. It's a little more expensive. It's $700. Do you have budget for this, or?
Yeah, we've got roughly between $7.50 and
all right. So Wirecast is. So the other thing you may want is the ability to have multiple cameras and switch between them. I mean, there's all sorts of other features you may or may not want. I would look at this. ManyCam looks pretty good. It's live streaming. Lots of people use it. It supports chroma keying. You can try it for free. There's a lot to be said for that. And then we have used Wirecast, which is a little bit more pro product. That's a little more expensive. But both of these will run on standard PCs or even laptops, which is pretty cool.
Okay, that's cool.
So that's a couple of good ones to look at.
And the streaming is just on the local network? It doesn't go offside?
You could do either. So, yeah, you absolutely could stream on the local network. And if you wanted to, you can stream to an endpoint and put it on, you know, Facebook Live, YouTube Live. There are lots of places that will support live streaming for free.
Okay. All right. Brilliant.
Yeah. Have fun.
Wonderful.
I really appreciate your call. It's nice to talk to you.
All right.
Take care, Trent.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Johnny Jett is a traveling man. He's our travel guru. JohnnyJett.com is his website, and he joins us each week to talk about using technology to improve your travels, whether it's for vacation or business. Hello, Johnny.
Hello, Leo.
How are you?
Good. So, you know, yesterday was Black Friday, but their deals are still going on.
Wait a minute. There's not Black Friday travel deals, are there?
Of course there are.
Really?
Are you kidding me? The travel industry just jumps all over that. And Cyber Monday. So they're usually good for the whole weekend, although I created two different posts, one for Black Friday, one for Cyber Mondays, but the Black Friday one is all you really need.
All right.
And some of the highlights, I mean, you can find everything from clothing like Scotty Vest 30% off to Singapore Airlines, $449 round trip in economy to Tokyo. Cathay Pacific has really good business class deals. Singapore actually has a really good deal too, $3,000, actually under $3,000 to Tokyo and I think even to Singapore. And all actually, they fly all over.
Now, so do you have to travel now, or can you book these? How far ahead? Can
no,
you
no,
book
no,
them?
No. These are for you have to look at the.
Usually, at the it's like six months, right, or something like that.
Some of them are up to the summer, usually around May.
Wow.
But I don't know exactly on these. Usually, they exclude Christmas and New Year, so don't get your hopes up for that.
Nice.
But almost all the airlines are putting out some kind of deal. Even WOW Airlines, the low fare.
What's WOW Airlines? I never heard of them.
They're the purple plane that you see. They're based in Reykjavik.
Oh, they're Icelandic. Iceland. Oh.
They had $99 fares, but they, you know, they get you on the bags,
right?
Your seat assignments, all that stuff.
Right.
But
right.
Hey, if you can pack light, although Iceland, it's difficult to pack light because it's not that warm.
It's aptly named, as you say.
Yes. So check those out.
So this is all on johnnyjet.com.
Yep. I just tweeted it. I put it in your show notes. So there's almost so many different hotels have all kinds of Black Friday deals, from the Outrigger in Hawaii for $119 a night to, I mean, 5-star hotels. Like, I can't even list them all. We'll be here for a while. But I have a lot of them. I have a lot of my highlights there in there.
Nice. And I should mention, just as a disclaimer, that Scotty Vest is a sponsor of some of our podcasts.
Oh, good. Yeah, he's one of my sponsors. I should mention that too on my newsletter. But yeah, I've been using him way before he started sponsoring.
Yes, me too.
Yes. So I got a really cool app for you to download before your trip to New York.
Oh, good.
I think you're going to love it.
Yep.
So do you like Shazam?
I love Shazam.
How about a Shazam for artwork?
Oh, so Shazam, you're listening to the song and you point Shazam at the speaker and it'll tell you what the song is, which is something I always want to know. What's that song? Who's that? What's the thing? So this does it. I could point it at a picture.
Exactly. So it's called Smartify, Smartify.
Wow.
It's a free download, Android and iOS. So they're right now they're in 30 different museums, including the Met in New York City, the Paul J. Getty in LA, a lot in London because it's a London based company. But not only will you do paintings, but it'll also do sculptures and other 3D objects. So it's really cool. Although I've been reading some of the reviews. Some of them say, you know, it doesn't work on all the different paintings. So it kind of has a low review.
Yeah. Right now I can't go to the website because it's got malware on it, but I'm sure they'll fix that. Yeah.
That's not good. Don't go to the website then.
Don't go to the website at this point. Is it smartify.org? Is that correct? Maybe you got it wrong.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's it.
Let me just double check. I could have it wrong. No, that's it.
Yeah, yeah. It's being blocked. I think their certificate might be shot. It's all right.
Okay,
you can still get the app. Smartify.
Yeah, let's hope the app doesn't.
No,
have
I'm sure
anything.
The app is fine. Sure. This is, by the way, it's funny because Google is putting companies like this out of business. You know, the new Pixel 2 XL. You can turn on a feature that is, it's just sitting there. Every song that it hears, it will put a little note on the bottom of the screen. Shazam-like note, but you don't have to do anything. It just does it. And there, Google has a new artificial intelligence feature called Lens that you point your camera at a work of art or a building or a product.
A menu,
and it'll identify it. It'll even translate it. Right. So it will do this artwork thing if you have but you need to have the new Google Assistant. I don't know if it's out for everybody yet. The new Google camera, I guess. So it means you probably have to have a... That's Pixel.
Well, the Lens 3D, the Lens app, they
you
bought
can get
that.
The app, yeah.
They, right. They bought that a while ago, and it's great for travel because, you know, it does translate so many, I think 100 different languages. So if you're in a restaurant where it's written in, you know, the language you do not speak, you can get it translated.
Yeah.
Or the street signs, and you don't even have to be online. It's amazing stuff.
Mine has not updated yet on the Pixel 2 XL, but when you get the Google Assistant running, it will have a little camera icon on it, and you can aim it at something and it will tell you what it is, including works of art. But that is really nice if it looks up the work of art. And I gather this is a nonprofit, Smartify, because of the
.org. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's a brilliant idea.
Love it. Because how often do you see that? Just the other day at Thanksgiving, we were sitting beneath a beautiful opera poster. And I said, now that looks like it's a Chagall, but I'm not sure it is. If I'd had Smartify, I could just take a picture and it would tell me, right?
I would hope so.
Very nice.
So we'll see. All right, I got one more. We have time for a website?
Got all the time in the world.
All right, good. So this one is real basic website, but it's kind of fun. It's called Globe Genie, GlobeGenie.com.
Oh, what is Globe Genie?
So they use Google Maps. Google's taking over the world, as you said. And it will teleport you to a random spot on there, and you can have it set up for auto, but, you know, 6 different continents. And it will refresh every 10 to 30 seconds. So just, up in the upper hand, right-hand corner, just click one of those, uncheck.
I can teleport,
you know, just do Africa
somewhere, and then I'm in Saskatchewan. I turned North America. It was off by default. I don't know why. Maybe they figure you don't want to go somewhere in your own area.
So I uncheck some of them, and I put in, you know, Africa. And,
There's a road in Japan. Here's a beach in Gosh, I don't know. Does it tell you?
Yeah, on the right-hand corner.
Santa Cruz Province.
Argentina.
Very nice. Look at this. We are seeing the world.
France. Here we're You're in France right there.
It's nighttime in France right now.
No, this is not live.
It's just not loading. So are these Google Maps or these cameras?
They're Google Maps.
Street View.
So you can zoom in and zoom out.
How fun is that?
I mean, if you're bored and you know you're a travel fanatic like I am, it's fun to check out.
Travel. Here I am in the cornfields of Colombia. Wow, there are cameras everywhere in the world. Virtual teleportation and sharing. It's called Globe Genie. And and you know, when you take places at random, you get just random places. It's interesting.
Yes, it is.
I like this. I'm going to turn it off. Turn on every 10 seconds. It's going to do it automatically every 10 seconds. And I'm going to turn on the Ken Burns effect, too. It'll do a Ken Burns effect.
I did a Ken Burns trip?
No. With the Talc, right?
With Talc, yeah, because he works closely with them. But yeah. We did the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Oh, you did tell me that. Was Ken there?
Yes, he spoke. He hung out. Man. We played baseball. They brought in Phil Niekro.
What?
Amazing guy.
Famous knuckleballer. Wow.
Yep.
So Johnny doesn't – he throws only – no curves, only sliders. I don't know what he throws. He throws knuckleballs, but they come in straight.
He was famous for knuckleballs.
Yes, I know. I'm talking about you, Johnny Jett. You throw them right in over the plate every time at johnnyjett.com, a great place to find travel tips and ideas, and he joins us every week. And he's going off – you can't tell us where, though, can you?
I can't, but I'm going
– Will you be here next week?
5,000 miles. I will.
What? You'll be back?
I sure will. I hope so.
10,000 miles in a week. JohnnyJett.com. Follow him on Instagram and Twitter. You'll find out there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Now we're in the dirt somewhere. This is fun. This would be a good screensaver. Just a different place.
I think it'd be great for kids. I heard Brazil. Your last caller from Australia.
Yeah, wasn't that cool? Yeah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. Michael is on the line from Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Michael.
Hello there.
Welcome to the show, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What can I do for you?
Well, this happens with holiday music and also surf music, ironically.
I love surf music.
When I try to play my playlist at random, invariably, it will try to play the same artist back to back, or the same song back to back, and it sort of takes you out of the, you know, your phantom or your AI DJ.
And what program are you using for this?
Well, I have Linux Mint, so I use Rhythmbox. I also
interesting.
Have,
so Rhythmbox isn't doing it really randomly. They're paying two in a row from a single artist. Is that every time or just once in a while?
I'd say about 50% of the time if you listen to a playlist.
How big is the playlist?
Let's see, between 40 and 50 songs.
So it shouldn't be doing that.
No.
So that's an error in its random number generator. Or something, or maybe something in the code that's saying play two in a row. Is there I've seen this happen on some programs. We'll do two in a row. I think it was Spotify. Somebody did this from a single artist. But this actually sounds, yeah, a twin spin, as they will say on the radio. But this sounds like an error.
I used to use Winamp, and I think you could specify in Winamp.
Maybe that was where I saw it. Yeah, two in a row.
To not do back-to-back.
Yeah, well, you shouldn't. If it's truly random, you might occasionally get back-to-back. But, well, how many? So it's 50 songs, but are there... Are 25 of them the same artist?
It's probably six to eight artists.
Yeah, you maybe just need more choices,
more artists.
Yeah, so there's two possibilities. I mean, if it's truly random, it could just be because it's a small pool and you're going to get some duplication like that. But it also could be that the random number generator is not working very well. You know, computers don't actually do real random numbers. They do fake random numbers. And, you know, this is open source software. Rhythmbox is good. I've used Rhythmbox. But maybe, you know, how it is with open source software, it's probably written by some guys in his spare time. And maybe somebody didn't do a good job with the randomization, that kind of thing. If it did it with more than one program, I'd worry about it. There are many other great music players available to you on Linux.
Well, Amazon Prime Music seems to do the same thing.
Interesting. Same playlist?
Different playlists.
Huh.
But my holiday playlist will play the same title by different artists back to back.
Oh, same title, different artists. Oh, that's interesting. Not same artist, different title.
Yes.
Ah. Yeah, with holiday playlists, you don't want to hear Let It Snow twice in a row. I understand that. Even if it's different artists. Well, it doesn't know enough to know that it's... that's a different song completely. It might be checking the artist. I doubt it's checking the name. So that would be a failing of the software. There's no fix for that. I mean... But if it's open source software, you can go to the Rhythmbox GitHub or whatever repository they use and file a bug report. You might have to have some luck. Amazon Prime, no way they're going to even notice that you report it.
Yeah.
But that's interesting. Yeah, I think it's probably a situation where you have. Especially with it will happen a lot with holiday music because really. There are only five or six different Christmas songs. They all just, different. They rotate. So I can see how that might happen, actually. You just need a larger pool of songs. Some playback programs, Jammer B, our studio manager is pointing out, may have a no repeats option. But see, I don't even think that would work if it's a different artist with the same song. That's just a matter of program logic. This is where we're a little bit at the mercy, aren't we, of software. Software, most of the time when we use it, is a blob, a black box, that we don't have much control of how it works. And if it doesn't work right, sometimes it's an obvious bug, it crashes. But sometimes it's an annoying little feature like this. There's not much you can do. And it's one of the reasons I like open source software, like Rhythmbox, the program he's using on Linux. Because you can, in theory anyway, contact the author. You can go to the repository or the site where the software is. If you were really motivated, you could download the software and modify it. You could fix it. And if you're really motivated and you know what you're doing, you can fix it and then submit it as a fix, and everybody would benefit. That's what I like about open source software. Stuff like this tends to get fixed. Closed source software is a black box. You don't have a means to fix it, and you just rely on contacting the developer to fix it. I'm a big fan of open source for that very reason. It's probably written in C, C++. Learn some C++ and fix it yourself. Chris and Hemet, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Leo. I had a question. I was wondering if you could help me maybe contact Apple to get some of my ideas across them.
They don't know me.
They don't know you?
If they do, they don't like me. Let's put it that way. I don't have any special in at Apple, unfortunately. If you have an idea for Apple, see, the problem is, this is similar. Big companies, if you have a fix for their software, maybe you can report it. If you have a product idea, which I take it you do, the risk is... The companies don't want to get sued. And I can tell you this from when I worked in a television network. People sent ideas for shows to us all the time. And the protocol for this was that if you get an idea for the show and for a show to do in the email, you're not allowed to read it. You immediately send it to a designated person, probably an attorney. Because the fear is, and Apple would have the same fear if you called them with a product idea, that they will independently come up with the same product and you will sue them, say, look, I have it right here. I sent this to Tim Cook on November 24th, and 3 months later they came out with the same product, and you might even win. Especially if you can get that case taken up in Tyler, Texas. That's where all the patent trolls go, Eastern Texas, because the courts there really favor this little guy. So the court might say, well, you know what? You did invent this. I think Apple owes you some money, my friend. So Apple, to defend themselves against this, is probably very has very distinct pathways for product pitches to go. I doubt very much they even, you know, take them as a rule. Especially Apple. You know, you might have more success. If you went to Google, you might have more success with Google. I think they're more open. The idea, I mean, Apple, the way Apple's run, look how they built their campus. It's inward facing, not outward facing. That new spaceship campus is a ring. And you can't, first of all, you can't get near it as a private public. You can go, they have a visitor center and you can see it from the roof. You can't go near it. And it's inward facing. The courtyard is inside. And that really reflects kind of Apple's mentality. We invent it. We invent the future. We're not interested. We are so far not interested not only in outside ideas. We don't even want to know what our users want. We just want to do it. We'll tell you what you want. Now, that goes back to Steve Jobs, who always felt like he knew better than anybody, including his users, what was the right thing to do. Right? If you use an Apple device, it's Apple's way or the highway. So I wouldn't get hold of, first of all, I'm the wrong guy to ask because Apple doesn't like me because I say things like this. There's no love lost. I actually love Apple. I bought every Apple product there ever is, and I'm a fan of many of them. But you don't talk about Apple this way, yeah, and win their hearts and minds. Apple tends to listen to the journalists that are fully praiseful at all times. So. If you have an idea, it's, you know, this is tough. I'll be brutally honest with you now. Ideas are plentiful. Anybody can have an idea, and many people do. How many times have you talked to a friend or a loved one who says, you know, if I could only start a restaurant that served just chili, it'd be the best thing ever. Or I've got an idea for floral print pants that if would just take over the world. It's easy to come up with the idea. Everybody has them. The idea is worthless. It's all about execution. And even great ideas, well marketed, executed well, fail all the time. So really, you know, Apple's brilliant at taking stuff to market and making it work. But generally, they do it themselves. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphone, smart watches, augmented reality, artificial reality. No, there's no, is there anything called artificial reality? I guess that's what virtual and augmented reality are in a way, right? ADA and video games, 8888 Ask Leo, we'll talk about those too. There's a game called Player Unknown's Battlegrounds. Have you played it yet? It's on the PC. It's on Steam. It's coming to the Xbox at the end of December. It's really popular. And, it, you know, it's not for the kids. It's a shooting, you know, game. Except it's kind of got an interesting... I like the plot line. It's what they call a battle royale. Kind of like the Hunger Games. You're dropped into a very realistic, large, vivid world with 99 other people, and you just you know, you're dropped at a random location. You may be standing right next to somebody, or you may be somewhere all alone. There are weapons and other items stored all over the place, and your goal is to go around, get as many weapons as you can, kill as many people as you can, and be the last man standing. Horrible, isn't it? Very popular. But they, you know, what's interesting is it's hugely successful. It's an independent game, not from a big game company, and it's doing fantastic. I haven't played it yet. I look forward to getting it on the Xbox when it comes out because I'm that kind of bloodthirsty person. Yeah, I don't know. You know why games are so violent besides the fact that people buy them? It turns out to be a fairly easy thing to do in software. The first video games on, you know, simple computers. Well, the first one you might have run into was Pong. You ever play Pong? Two paddles and a square ball. Wasn't even round because they couldn't do round. Didn't have enough dots. that went back and forth. And the reason it's easy to do is because it's easy to animate the ball, easy to animate the paddles, and collision detection turns out to be a fairly easy thing to do. At first in software, and then with the early computers like the Atari, built into hardware collision detection. The ball ran into the paddle. Okay, reverse direction was an easy thing to do in software. Bonk, 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 bonk. Well, it turns out collision detection became so popular that many, many games are written around this notion of something running into something else. And, of course, it didn't take long before, because boys will be boys, it ended up being a bullet running into a person or a monster or a ghost. And, you know, projectile weapons, very easy to do in software. Now, of course, once people started writing those games, and they did very early, they became very popular, and they are easily the most popular type of video game out there by far. Sports games are popular. Harder to write, though. You know, that's a harder game to write. Driving games popular, but nothing like shooting games. And, of course, with the advent of a game called Doom, D-O-O-M, that's when the first-person shooter came out. Doom, you didn't see you. You only saw the monsters, the evil monsters, and you saw your hands and part of your hands and the weapon, and you could see, and it was as if the screen was a viewfinder. You were looking out your eyes. It was a first-person experience. Instead of top-down, which games had been before, you'd see yourself on a map running around. And it was only when computers got fast enough we could do this first-person shooter. And Doom just took the world by storm for other reasons, too. Great marketing. They gave away the first few levels, so people spread it around like crazy. It was a huge success and spawned, well, most of the current games. And really, Doom is not so very different from PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. It's just the scenery is more realistic. But in every other, you know, it's pretty much the same thing. You're not shooting monsters, you're shooting the other players. That actually was another big shift in video gaming. When you stopped shooting artificial intelligence characters, enemies that were generated by the computer, and started shooting real people, not, you know, their avatar, their image, in an online game. And that didn't follow too slowly behind Doom. The Doom was followed by Quake, which is just another Doom, very nicely done, beautiful Doom. And then Quake came up with arena play, where you'd be playing against other players. The internet became fast enough and ubiquitous enough that you could actually, well, this was kind of cool. Other players could be in the same place you were, and you could see them, and they would look like a monster, and you'd look like a monster, and you'd shoot at each other and that kind of thing. It's still the same collision detection. It's same fundamental technology behind it. PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds want to get into China. They want to get into China in the worst way. That's a market every computer company wants to get into. A billion consumers. They love technology. They buy it like crazy. They have lots of money to spend. Did you see the Chinese version of Black Friday is called Singles Day, 11-11. It was a couple of weeks ago, the 11th day of November. Singles Day. So last year, Black Friday, don't have the numbers for this year, but last year online, Black Friday, about $3 billion in sales. This year, Singles Day, November 11th, $25 billion in sales. $10 billion in the first hour and 6 minutes. So, of course, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds wants to get it. Hey, whoa, this is a big market. We'd love to get in there. But you got this problem, the Chinese government. They, you know, they're kind of funny. I guess they don't mind they don't mind violence so much. They don't want too much of it, but it's sex they don't like. And, of course, anything that criticizes the regime. So they're trying to make PlayerUnknown, and this is how they're going to sell it in China. The way they got it in China, they have socialist messages in the game. Now, I haven't seen it yet. I don't know. Does that mean a billboard that says, long live the five-year plan? Workers of the world unite? I don't know what I don't know what that looks like. But the creators of PUBG, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, the creators of that said, we'll put some socialist messages in there. We'll put some billboards in there. We'll put some ads in there. Ah, okay. That's how important it is. And it very few countries. Apple has already pulled VPN programs out of the App Store, and now Skype has disappeared from the App Store because the Chinese authorities don't like people using Skype because, why? Same reason our authorities don't like it. They can't listen in. It's encrypted. They don't want people having conversations they can't listen to. Be a little hard to ban Skype in the U.S. It's coming, but for now anyway. But in China, no problem. So Apple and Microsoft makes Skype. Companies that have app stores in China, no, they don't sell it anymore. Can't get it. Can't get it. Yeah, let's see. Mike B. says he's found are those some images, Mike, of the Player Unknown's Battleground in the Chinese version? I'd love to see what that looks like. I'd like to get it. I would like to get. Maybe you carry a red banner. That would be something. 8888-ASK-LEO. The website, techguylabs.com. If you have a question, give me a ring. You can also join us in a chat room. We got a great chat room. I mention it all the time. Knox Harrington in the chat room says, the game stops and you have to read quotes from Chairman Mao's little red book and then you can play some more. Maybe. I don't know. chat room is irc.twit.tv, but you'll also find a link at our website, techguylabs.com. That is free, by the way. There's no charge for any of that. No sign up even. We don't want your email address. You can even use a phony name, a handle, as the kids call it, in the chat room. We just keep it clean and friendly, or you'll get booted out. We like to make sure it's a family-friendly place. irc.twit.tv. Phone number, as I said, 888-827-5536. Let's take a little break. Clear the decks here. And we will take some of your calls, answer some of your questions when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Now you're just teasing me. Michael Cozio, our musical director. Actually, if you were in L.A., where Michael is, over the last couple of days, you probably felt like you were in Aruba or Jamaica or Montego Bay. 90 degrees. Is it still warm, Michael, now, or is it cooled off a little bit?
Yeah, it's still warm.
Yeah. I saw a lot of fun Thanksgiving pictures of people eating turkeys in bikinis and things. 8888-ASK-LEO. Chris on the line from Thousand Oaks. Hello, Chris. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, I'm in Thousand Oaks. I just needed to make sure my air conditioning turned on.
Yeah, is it still hot?
Oh, man, 90-something. That's wow. Why I'm stuffed away in my office.
Wow.
Doing what I usually do for the last two decades, listening to you.
Is it unusual to be this warm in late November?
Yes. Usually I try to put off all my garage activities till around this time, yeah. But I haven't doing it because it's too dang hot.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, there's an event coming up. I'm an engineer, and it's called SolidWorks World. And about every year I try to invite one of my friends to come along because it's, I don't know if you're familiar, it's a solid modeling software.
Yeah, I know. It's CAD software, SolidWorks, yeah.
Well, yes, but a little bit more involved in such as that you're dealing with material densities and layout, and this event happens.
So are you a civil engineer? What kind of engineering do you do?
No, I'm an actual manufacturing engineer.
Okay, and but you would use SolidWorks to design products to have them manufactured?
Every single thing that you're looking at or sitting on has been designed in a solid environment.
Makes sense, yeah.
And
then you could prototype it as Apple does. You could get a CNC cutter or a 3D printer and take that SolidWorks graphic model and actually make a physical thing.
Yes, and one of the things that last year it was at Staples Center, and this year, I think next year, they move them around, and it's international. There's I think there was over 6,000 people last year, and there's people from, you know, Japan and in France, of all people. And actually, one of the speakers that they had there was what they call an ethics engineer. And he mentioned the programming necessary. And this, you know, I'm trying to relate this to your show, of course.
Thank you. You don't have to, but thank you.
Okay. Well, he mentioned the Tesla. And, of course, I thought of you because, you know.
I do drive one, and I'm a fan, yeah.
And he talked about the ethics engineering aspect of it, about how this smart technology, you know, if there's a school bus coming at you, is it going to, I mean, regardless of the fact that you own the car, Is it going?
Yeah, you're talking about self-driving vehicles, and it isn't. You know, Tesla's nowhere near that level 4 or 5 self-driving where it would have to make a decision like that.
Right.
They often talk about the trolley car scenario. The idea being that as a human, you might be confronted as you drive down the street with a tough ethical decision. Do you, you know, you're going to run into something? Are you going to run into a school bus full of kids? Or that 92-year-old person slowly crossing the street? And as a human, you might make a value judgment. But what does a computer do? Does it calculate, well, how many lives it would save? But the computer doesn't know that 92-year-old person maybe invented a form of theoretical physics that's going to change time travel as we know it, because it doesn't know that. And, you know, I have not talked to designers of smart software, but it is my sense, and I would love to hear from somebody who's working on this, that this is kind of a red herring. You don't design decisions like that into software. You don't design it into humans either. What you design the software to do is drive the best you possibly can to avoid colliding with anything. And if you do collide with something, it's an accident. It's not something that the software decides, I'm going to collide with that instead of that. It will attempt, in my opinion, in every case, to avoid colliding with anything.
And this is the kind of event where I think you would absolutely just go and fall in love, because it's complete. You're around all the people.
I love tech conferences for that reason. I do, because you want to be around smart people, don't you?
That's it. And I usually leave your program brain melted. This one takes weeks. Nonetheless, as I mentioned, I don't think for a second that you couldn't get in on your own. But I usually invite a friend.
And aren't you kind? Aren't you kind?
It's February 4th through 7th, and that's one of the things.
Wow.
I'm
going to take. Are you asking me out on a date?
You're driving.
I would love to. I don't know what my schedule holds in that time frame, but that is a very, very sweet offer. And as you say, I generally, when I go to these things, I go as press, and they're more than happy to have press attend.
Right. And yeah. And I'm sure of that.
Aren't you kind?
It's my fill-out form day, and I says, well, let me ask Leo first.
Oh.
If he shuts me down, I'll have to.
I don't want to shut you down. The real problem is, I don't know if you know this, I'm not in Southern California. I'm in Northern California.
Understood. My brother lives in Foster City up there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm in Petaluma, which is an hour north of San Francisco. Let me just look what days those are. The other problem I have is, yeah, those are my big days of the week, February 4th through 7th.
Leo, this thing will absolutely change your life.
I know, but there are people who need me here on the radio show. That's February 4th. And then I do shows also on the 6th and the 7th. So maybe I could come down on the 5th. I'd have to look into what we call a turn and burn, fly down for the day. Maybe I could, but I'll tell you what. You give that extra to somebody you know, and I will endeavor to be there. I think that is a great invitation. I think SolidWorks sounds like a lot of fun.
And I think that we're in the same field, just with a little bit different tools. When you're dealing with virtual reality, this is the first place that I saw it. It was a few years ago that I saw the VR stuff,
the
Oculus Rift.
Yes.
And you're using it going inside.
Wouldn't that be cool? That is, to me, one of the few really good ideas for using virtual reality is for a designer. And you can model it with your hands and walk around it and see what it looks like. What do you design?
I usually do conversions from what's called a billet to a forging or a casting, and usually in the automotive aftermarket.
Interesting.
So somebody comes up and says, hey, I need a set of rods for my small block Chevy. And you go, okay. And kind of something that you hit on not too long ago was ideas. Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. Ideas are everywhere. So it used to be, okay, what are you designing? Now the first question is quantities.
Yeah, can you make it? Can you manufacture it? And Apple really showed that, because when they design an iPhone, it's not just pretty. They have to know that they can make 100 million of them in 6 months.
Right.
That's a lot. They contracted with Samsung for 90 million OLED screens. 90 million.
That blows me away, because my quantities usually deal in the 5 to 5,000 range.
And by the way, 90 million, and they got to all be perfect.
Yeah.
Wow.
And what we can usually do now, and I know you got to move on, so I'll finish up with this. But if we wanted to do, say, a iPhone holder for your Harley Davidson, well, I don't really even need to have the iPhone or the Harley Davidson.
No, you need the models.
I download it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I send it to a CNC.
If you've ever wondered how iPhone cases come out the day the iPhone comes out, that's how.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's how. So, hey, it was great talking to you, Chris. You're the first person who's ever asked me for a date on the show. In my whole life, I've been working in this business for many years. Thank you.
Well, you're the first person that's
sorry to turn you down, but thank you. Leo Laporte, I'm blushing, the tech guy. John in Indianapolis. Hi, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey.
Welcome.
Hey, got a question. I am looking at purchasing a laptop. The last time I did so was about 2006. I bought a Dell Vostro 14-inch machine.
Yeah.
It's held up great. And
you're still using that laptop after 11 years?
I am, but I'm beginning to realize I've got a feeling if I were to open it up, the capacitors are getting about as big as everybody's bellies after Thanksgiving.
They're all swole up. What version of Windows are you using with that?
I'm running Windows 7.
Okay. Pretty modern, pretty recent.
Yeah, I tried to go to 10, and it wouldn't do the upgrade for that.
Yeah.
And the machine heats up, so I know it's not ventilating well. So I'm looking at purchasing something new. And or newer machines.
Well, since you like Dell, they make. I'll give you a number of them. But go ahead. You had some more to say, so I just didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yeah. So my question is, I've heard you talk about the ThinkPad T434.
Yes. Yes.
And I see a lot of them available that are refurbished.
Yes.
And the prices. I mean, for an i5 third generation, it's a Sandy Bridge processor.
Yeah,
so
it's going
older.
Back pretty far. Yeah.
Yeah, but you can find it for $200.
Yeah.
And
the thing that people love about the ThinkPads is you can work on them. So where I would go just to get a taste of what's out there is the Reddit ThinkPad subreddit. It's reddit.com/u/ThinkPad. Because there are a lot, that is the most avid ThinkPad fan group around. And a lot of what they talk about is taking something like that T430 and upgrading the keyboard or putting an SSD. One of the first things, in fact, you're going to want to do is put an SSD in it, a solid state drive. Maybe you want to upgrade the screen. You can do it.
I've seen a lot of YouTube videos with that also.
Yeah, it's
and
really easy.
Because my thought was instantly, because of all the Black Friday deals, I was going to upgrade to a 500 gigabyte SSD for about $100.
Absolutely. That would improve the speed immensely.
And then add another 8 gig of memory to take me to 12.
You bet.
It's an old processor. My concern with it, and this is where I wanted to get your input. The motherboard's going to be old.
Yeah, I mean the processor and motherboard are not upgradable. That's the part. Basically, that's what you're buying. Right.
And so I'm trying to make the decision between going with the Dell. I'm trying to keep it under $700.
Well, I should point out that at that price point, you could get a brand new. 7th, maybe even 8th generation Intel laptop.
Right. And I'm looking at a business machine.
I think that I have a T470. I have a T470, which is, of course, the current 400 series, T400 series from Dell. Lenovo ThinkPad. These things are tanks. That 430, if it's been well kept up, is probably in great shape, has a better keyboard, frankly, than this 470. And is eminently upgradable. So if you're handy, you don't mind opening that thing up, putting stuff in.
And I've built desktops before.
Yeah, it's similar to that. If you look at the ThinkPads, they have standard Phillips screws in them. They're easy to get into. The parts are widely available. Unlike other companies, Lenovo doesn't kind of keep a lid on those. You've watched the video, so you kind of have an idea of what you're getting into. I think that's for somebody who's really motivated, I think that's a great thing to do. And you could get a more recent one even if you wanted, spend a little bit more.
My big concern was more so with a refurbished machine, which I've not bought a refurb before.
Yeah, no.
And it being a motherboard, because I know if that board goes out, then you got to try to go down that.
Well, it was $200.
Really worth it.
It was $200, right? Not a huge expense. Some of your time. You'll be able to keep the SSD and put it on another machine. In fact, that's one thing you know, that motherboard isn't going to give that SSD everything it deserves because it's not going to be as fast as a more modern motherboard. So you probably, you know, you're not getting PCIe speeds or better, which the SSD could use. But still, it's going to be a lot better than a spinning drive on there. So,
And what I'm wanting to use it for is web browsing, things like that.
Perfect.
Relatively light. But I've also got a couple of – I'm a meteorologist, so I've got some radar programs I use that are a little more Windows heavy. And then also some occasional video editing, but nothing too intensive, though.
You know, the truth of it is that Intel isn't really making massive leaps with every generation. So you're five generations behind with that i5, Sandy Bridge. But on the other hand, it's not five times faster to get an eighth generation Coffee Lake. It's maybe, you know, 50% faster at best.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't making massive improvements anymore because they really hit the limit. So what they're doing instead, and this is what they're doing now with the new Coffee Lake, is they're putting more processors in there. They're putting four processors or eight or 16 processors in the die. But I have to say, I think that you're on the right track. If you've got a budget and you have some time, you're fairly technically sophisticated, you've watched the videos so you know what you're getting into, getting a good condition used ThinkPad and upgrading it is a great idea. And if you go to the Reddit, the ThinkPad subreddit, and just read what people are doing, you'll see this is a very common procedure. And you can ask questions there. In fact, this question would be best asked there because there'll be somebody who has a T430 who has done what you want to do and can give you some idea of what to look for.
Well, and I think the thing is, I mean, it's half the cost of a new Dell,
yeah.
If not more, by the time I upgrade it. But,
yeah.
But then at the same time, the Dell hardware is brand new.
I spent $1,300 on a fairly well-equipped T470S.
Okay.
So that's you're right. It's about twice as much.
Okay.
But I have to say, I love my Lenovo ThinkPads. They're rock solid machines.
Well, and that's the reason I like going with the business machines. And I think the reason my Vostro lasted so long from Dell,
right?
Because I went the business route, and it can take some beating a little bit.
Most manufacturers in the PC world will make a consumer grade and a business grade, or a pro grade, or enthusiast grade. Where they may have different names for it, but almost always a consumer grade is junky because they need to keep the price down. That's the $400 to $500 laptops.
There's lots of plastic.
Lots of plastic. If you get the business grade, it's going to be better quality components. It's going to last you longer. And it's going to cost more. But that's what you've got is a good idea. It's kind of like a classic car, isn't it? You're buying a car that has, you know, a laptop that has some real juice still left in it, I would say. I wouldn't hesitate.
Hey, thank you very much,
my
Leo.
Pleasure. I love the idea. And, as a ThinkPad fan, I love going to that ThinkPad subreddit and just reading what these guys do. And there's it's just so much fun. They have a great time. And that's part of it, too. Yeah, if you've built your own PC, you obviously have that mindset where you kind of like the idea of making your own thing. Nowadays, building your own PC, even upgrading a laptop is really more like building a car with Legos. It's not exactly, you're not going to get your fingernails dirty. It's all kind of unscrew this, snap in that. There's very little challenge in it if you're careful and you move methodically. I'm going to give a plug to one of our podcast sponsors, iFixit.com. They publish manuals, they sell parts, and most importantly for you, they also sell tools, the kinds of tools you'll need, including, you know, of course, the wrist strap so you don't shock it with static electricity, a magnetic mat to hold the screws, that's hugely valuable, and then various little screwdriver bits that you may need to get in there, pry stuff apart and so forth. iFixit.com. All right, let's take a little break for words from our fine sponsors, and I will be back. Don't forget, everything we talk about, links and so forth, you don't have to write it down. We put it all on the webpage. James does. Thank you, James. TechGuyLabs.com. Final segment of the Tech Guys Show for this day after Black Friday, coming up next. Michael Cozio, our musical director, always plays a disco song for this guy right here, Dick DiBartolo. Boogie Oogie Oogie. I don't know what this song is, but I like it. I like it. Dick DiBartolo is the Mad's Maddest writer, and he's our personal Gizmo Wizard. We call him the Giz Wiz. Coming to you live from Gizneyland.
Yes, yes. And
everybody dance. Clap your hands. Yes, and?
Leo, I bought my first smart home gadget.
You mean you've had a dumb home all this time?
Yes, because I have nothing to control. You know, like, watch, I'm in the kitchen. Okay, now if I go over there, I'm in the bedroom. So yeah. I am the hub. I'm the hub.
It's really
the hub of my domain.
It's not like you have a long way to go to turn the lights off.
No. But, yeah. You know, Black Friday, I actually shop on a Charcoal Tuesday. it like leads up to Black Friday.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
So I could not resist this. You talked about it on one of your shows. Might have been Screensavers. It was under $20, and I bought the strangely named Eufy Genie.
You bought a Eufy? Yeah,
a Eufy. I don't know why they named it that. It's EUFY. Okay. But it's from our friends at Anker. So
it
looks like an
Amazon Echo Dot, kind of.
Yes, exactly. So it's the first thing I ever owned, and you'll appreciate this. I plugged it in, and the first thing I asked it is, I won't say the name because it triggers them
over. Say Eufy.
Yeah. Eufy, play a disco song from Donna Summer.
And did it?
It did.
Yay.
And then Dennis Wunderlin, my partner, came in and said, play something from Blossom Deary.
Oh, Lord. And it knew that?
It knew that.
Wow.
So I'm going, you know, this is pretty good for $20.
You finally, welcome to the 21st century.
Yeah.
Now, how does the speaker sound in this? Because one of the problems with the Echo Dot, it's very tinny speaker.
You know what? Just judging from the dimensions on both of them, this one is about a third bigger. And reading reviews, people seem to think this sounds a little bit better. I mean, it's not going to be your main thing. But on top of a desk, it sounds fine.
Now, and it's Amazon voice services. It's Echo in
there,
right? Yes,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Can you here's my question. Can you connect it to speakers?
You know what? It there's no Bluetooth in this.
Oh.
But in the box, there's a 5-foot audio cable.
See, that's better anyway. I think that's better than Bluetooth.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about breakup or dropping signals or anything.
Right.
So then, you know, I'm liking this a lot. So yesterday, Black Friday.
Oh, no.
Yes, Amazon has dropped the Echo to $29.
Yeah, so you bought that too?
Well, yes, but it gets better. And I think this offer is coming back for Cyber Monday. When you click on buy it, it's $29.95. When you click on buy it, it says, would you like to spend $5 more and get the $31 Telelink smart switch?
Ooh.
So I said, yeah.
Because then you can say, talk to your lights.
I can talk to my lights or turn on things that plug into this. So now I am hooked. So now I have two smart home gadgets.
It really goes crazy after that, Dick. Yeah. I gotta warn you.
How many of you?
I don't lost count. I go into my office. There's ones that are unplugged that are not in use. I have so many. Because I keep buying them. Like this, I shouldn't buy this Eufy, but at $20, boy, that's tempting. I got nowhere to put it. Wow.
I know.
EUFY. And the website, I mean, you can buy it on Amazon, but the website is Eufy Life, EUFYLIFE.
Yeah, but for this weekend, for $5, let's see, I paid 20 for it. I think it's back to $25. So you might as well put $5 more.
And get the Dot plus Switch.
And you can get the Dot, and then add $5 to that, and you'll get the Dot and the Switch.
Has your Dot arrived?
No, it was supposed to arrive today, but, you know, normally when you buy something on Amazon, you know, in 1 minute they send you the invoice saying, you know, we got you. It took 2 hours.
They're busy
because yesterday, this was yesterday.
Yes, Black Friday. Yeah. It's a little
Now, the Genie, I don't think it's, I'm not sure if it's the exact same voice as, because she only works 9 to 5 and she wasn't in, she didn't come in Thanksgiving at all.
No, it is a different voice, slightly different voice.
Oh, okay,
Yeah.
And she's a little lazier.
And she doesn't work as hard, but in every other respect, very similar.
It's perfect.
Isn't that funny?
Perfect.
So you finally entered the voice-controlled world.
I did.
This is all the rage now, you know. I mean, I think this is the at this price, when they get down to 20 and 30 bucks, I think that they become an impulse purchase for a lot of people who've been hearing us talk about them. You know, the first time I bought an Echo was $200.
Yeah.
And I had to wait. You know, you had to.
And wasn't the first Dot 80? And then they suddenly came out with it for 49.
Dropping the price. It's amazing. Yeah. Of course, don't forget that, and you might as well try it too. Google has its, you know, Google Home Mini. That's $30 with a $10 gift card. So, all in all, I mean, these companies are practically giving them away, hoping to make money off you on the other side. You're going to start buying stuff from Amazon on your Eufy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So I am hooked.
I wonder if Eufy gets a cut. I bet they do.
You know, I'll ask her. Oh, she's gone home already.
I'll see you tomorrow, Dick. I got to go home. I got to go. My dogs are killing me.
She left 10 minutes early.
Standing in that corner all day just waiting for you to command. I'm just tired. Dickie D is at gizwiz.biz. Last chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine before the mail room closes. Go to gizwiz.biz, click the What the Heck Is It contest button, and then figure out what that close-up picture of a gadget is. The 12 right answers get an autographed copy of Mad Magazine, and 24 wrong but clever answers also get autographed copies of Mad. And I imagine since this is the last one, you're just going to clean that mail room right out.
Yeah, before the trucks come this
they
December
don't
22nd.
Move them. They don't want to move them. Just clean it out. Clean it out.
Exactly.
Gizwiz.biz. Now, Dick, don't forget, you're going to do an early Giz Fizz right after the radio show today, right?
Perfect. Right. I'm ready.
See you in a few
Thank
minutes.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dickie D. Last call of the day. Clyde in Sherman Oaks. Hi, Clyde.
Hi. Yeah, I bought a new HP printer on November 20th at Best Buy to replace an older HP that suffered from a short. However, the new printer was not compatible with my Windows 7.
Oh, no. What?
That's right. It wasn't compatible. And I couldn't get it to work, so I returned it the next day.
That is, by the way, the best reason to buy from a big box store or Best Buy, because they have good return policies, and you don't have to pack it up and ship it. You just bring it right back. So I'm glad that you were able to do that.
Yeah. Do you know where I don't have a printer. However, so I'm really out of luck right now. And I was wondering, do you know where I could get a printer that would be compatible with my Windows 7? And it can be an old printer.
HP has a whole page for Windows 7 printers. I mean, you can get a Windows 7 compatible printer from HP still. You just have to choose the right printer. I'm going to put a link up in the show notes. But there are a number of good HP printers still. It's HP.com and then blah blah blah. They're still offering Windows 7 computers printers. It's weird that they're not that printer was not compatible. Because Windows 7 is still current. In fact, I'm pretty sure more Windows 7 users than there are Windows 10 users still. So I'll put a link in the show notes to a website with some compatible Windows 7 compatible printers. You can just do a Google search for Windows 7 compatible computers. That's a shame, though. It really is. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.